This is Kathy coming to you with the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, the 19th of August, starting with the front page. Data centers, key issue in a race for governor. State lawmakers may tackle new regulations in the fall veto session. When Governor J.B. Pritzker signed tax incentives for tax centers for data centers into law in his first year as governor in 2019, Republicans and Democrats celebrated the plan as an economic driver. In today's world, data centers are as critical a part of our infrastructure as our roads, trains, and schools, Pritzker said in October 2019. With the legislation assigned into law, we are welcoming a surge of economic development, labor income, and good union jobs to Illinois. Now, 8 years and nearly two full terms later, the governor has paused those incentives as the onset of data centers has stressed energy and water resources, and public opinion has swiftly turned against the tech behemoths. At the crux of changing debate on data centers is the advent of artificial intelligence. The technology requires a new class of data center, hyperscale, always-on facilities that require massive amounts of energy. We weren't talking about AI hyperscale. Scalers back in 2019, Pritzker said at an unrelated news conference earlier this month. I've already taken action. We've taken away the data center tax credits that existed, but it's with the goal of getting legislation that will ensure that the people of Illinois, the businesses of Illinois, are not having burdened upon them higher electric rates, higher water rates, or having environmentally unsound practices by these data centers. Polling conducted this spring on behalf of the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, which has led for the push for data center regulation, saw Illinoisans from across the political spectrum favoring legislation that would require hyperscale data centers to bring their own energy and establish new reporting requirements on water use and environmental impacts. Polling conducted this spring on behalf of the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, which has led the push for data center regulations, showed that Illinoisans from across the political spectrum favor legislation that would require hyperscale data centers to bring their own energy and establish new reporting requirements on water use and environmental impacts. Pritzker's Republican opponent, Darren Baylor, has also evolved in his support of data centers. While seeking to seize on their unpopularity by blaming the governor for the incentives package, he's making AI a major piece of his campaign strategy. To be anti-AI, anti-data center, that's not what this is about at all, Bailey said in an interview. It's about protecting the people. The changing public perception of data centers tracks with the evolution of the industry. That's led political candidates to take notice. I think political candidates have started to realize more within the last year or so just how important this issue is to voters, because it goes so far beyond just energy bill impacts, Illinois Environmental Council spokesperson Hannah Flath said. Regardless of your political affiliation, regardless of where you live in the state of Illinois or across the country, you have a reason, at least one reason, to be concerned about data centers. Per the Clean Jobs Coalition survey, when respondents were asked whether they would support regulations on data centers to minimize their impact on our utility bills, climate, and water while still allowing them to be built, 68% of respondents said they would somewhat or strongly support such legislation. Support was slightly stronger at 71% among Democrats and independents, although 62% of the Republicans also supported this idea. Bailey told Capital News Illinois that finding ways to regulate data centers falls back to one of the themes of the campaign, affordability. He said new utility regulations for the facilities will help lower Illinoisans' utility bill, while ending tax credits will lower property tax burdens as data centers cover a greater share. He pointed to Pritzker's signature on the 2019 law establishing a tax incentive program designed to attract data centers to Illinois. Bailey voted against it when he was a state representative. Though he opposed the original bill, he and every member of the Senate at the time supported a law in 2021 that expanded it. That program committed more than an estimated $650 million in tax exemptions to 34 data center projects before Pritzker put it on pause in June, according to the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, after lawmakers failed to act on his request for new data center regulations in the spring session. Pritzker celebrated the groundbreaking of several new data centers in Illinois before AI significantly burst onto the scene, including the opening of Meta's data center in DeKalb in November of 2023. It isn't an accident, though, that Meta and many other tech giants are seeking massive potential in our great state for data center growth, Pritzker said this year. Their decision to locate here is a reflection of the hard work that our General Assembly members and our administration have done to position our state to win this business. A year later, he was present at the groundbreaking for Cirrus One in Aurora, where he said electricity in Illinois is readily available and reliable. But by the beginning of this year, Pritzker's focus shifted to new regulations as the industry evolved. The governor asked lawmakers in his February State of the State address to impose a 2-year moratorium on a new data center tax credit and further demanded that data centers now supply their own electricity. We need to think critically about our future energy usage with the needs of Illinois households at the forefront, Pritzker said at the time. So in the face of rising demand and surging prices, I'm proposing a 2-year pause on authorization of new data center tax credits. With the shifting energy landscape, it is imperative that our growth does not undermine affordability and stability for our families. Advocates, including the same organization that criticized the governor this spring for a lack of engagement on passing data center regulations, said no one, not even Pritzker, could have foreseen the challenges that data centers would bring. Andrew Ryan, policy director of the Prairie Rivers Network, said 2019 was a different world in terms of data centers. While traditional data centers have existed for decades in Illinois, the new hyperscale data centers needed for AI require significantly more energy, water, and space. Some of the largest proposals, Ryan said, would consume half the energy of the entire city of Chicago and take up a space as big as Central Park. It feels like, why is this conversation new? And of course, the answer is generative AI, Ryan said. It's not just that we're aware of something that wasn't there. It's that what they're doing has changed the scale of what is happening, has changed in a meaningful way. Advocates for the data center industry say they know public opinion views them unfavorably. Brad Teitz, director of Midwest Government Affairs for the Data Center Coalition, said in an interview, much of that comes down to misconceptions and that the industry should listen to communities and address their concerns. You can't discount the fact that the data center industry is providing an essential service that we all rely on as residents and businesses, Teitz said. And data centers bring significant economic benefits to the communities in which they locate. One such misconception that members of the data center industry point out is that all of Illinois' new hyperscale data center proposals would support AI. Rather, most are still used for traditional cloud computing and digital business infrastructure. Specific concerns of running afoul of the state's strong biometric privacy law have also preemptively kept some AI developers at bay, according to industry insiders. Complicating the regulatory picture, a growing swath of the population would prefer full moratoriums on new hyperscale data centers to aggressive regulation. Of the 21% polled who opposed the proposed regulations, more than half said they did so because they oppose hyperscale data centers being built at all. People want, at the very least, to see these regulations in place if they are going to welcome data centers and the benefits that do come with them to their local community, Flath said. Even nearly 6 months into the general election for governor, the data center debate continues to evolve. Bailey seemed to initially balk at Pritzker's incentives pause during a news conference responding to the State of the Union address as he listed the proposal, among others, from Pritzker that he disapproved. We heard about new fees on social media companies, new regulations on insurers, new spending initiatives, and even a pause on data center tax incentives at a time when other states are competing aggressively for investment, Bailey said. But, speaking to the Capital News Illinois this month, Bailey argued his campaign forced Pritzker to support more rigorous regulations. When asked to provide evidence of that, a spokesperson for Bailey pointed to social media posts he made in April, 2 months after Pritzker announced his proposal. Alex Gao, spokesperson for Pritzker's campaign, said the decision to pause the tax incentives program was not inspired by Bailey. Bailey also claims Pritzker is personally benefiting from data center construction in Illinois, specifically Meta's site in DeKalb. He owns 25% of Facebook, God bless him for that, Bailey claimed to Pritzker while campaigning in Chicago last month. Financial disclosure records show Pritzker does own stock in Meta, managed through his blind trust, and although it's not clear how much, but it's nowhere near Bailey's claim. A 25% stake in the company would be worth approximately $375 billion, over 87 times Pritzker's estimated $4 billion net worth. Meta CEO and founder Mark Zuckerberg owns roughly 13% of economic interest in the $1.5 trillion company, while 61% voting power, according to its 2026 proxy statement. Other major investors include BlackRock and Vanguard, which each own around 6-7%. State law also requires the governor to disclose every asset for which he, his wife, or his children have direct beneficial ownership interest exceeding $10,000. While Bailey voices concerns about data centers, his campaign often posts artificial intelligence-generated images on social media, including an image of a campaign button that said, "Say no to data centers," which Facebook labeled as an AI image. He argued that doesn't make his position on data centers inconsistent. At a forum last month in Lake Zurich, Bailey said data centers are necessary, though he's wary of tax incentives for them. "We've got to have the data centers in time. We had the race for space. We've had the arms race," Bailey said. "This new race is technology, and we cannot let China beat us in this race." Pritzker also hasn't adopted an anti-data center position, despite his support for more regulations. "Illinois has an opportunity to continue leading in technological innovation and economic growth, but we also have a responsibility to protect working families and local communities as the data center industry rapidly expands," Pritzker said in his June announcement, directing the state to pause processing new data center tax incentives. Pritzker said he wants data centers coming to Illinois to bring their own resources, rather than depending on the same utilities and water that other residents and businesses use. "We're not going to incentivize you. We're going to tell you you've got to bring energy with you if you're going to come, and you've got to have closed-loop systems to make sure that you're not contaminating our water or taking too much of our water," Pritzker said at a forum on Quantum last month, addressing data center developments. The pause was designed to give lawmakers more time to pass new regulations when they return to session in November after the midterm election, but it also upset labor leaders who see the projects as a benefit to their unions. "This pause does nothing to lower utility bills, protect the grid, or advance clean energy," labor leaders said in a statement in June. "Instead, it will send billions of dollars in investment and thousands of union jobs to Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio, states that sit on the same electrical grid where those data centers will be built anyway, just without Illinois workers protected by national leading labor standards and without a clean energy requirements we've collaboratively fought to establish here." More recently, prominent labor leaders have circulated a proposal for a legislative framework that would restart the tax incentive program and reshape the state's biometric privacy law to be more favorable to AI developers, while setting baseline transparency standards around the use of non-disclosure agreements. The proposal calls for requiring binding community benefit agreements, closed-loop water cooling systems with incentive for use of treated wastewater, use of union labor agreements, and a bring-your-own energy model, prioritizing grid interconnection for projects that support renewable energy development. Pritzker said last week the idea is not a bill and declined to take a position on it. He said in June the state needs to focus on responsible growth for the industry that also protects the state's resources. Bailey wants to go a step further and pause tax incentives for all data center projects, even ones currently getting a break from the state, until there's a greater understanding of their effects on water and electricity. "I think we need to have immediate halt, because ultimately, if we continue on this path we're going on, energy prices are going to continue to skyrocket," Bailey said. He said it's a matter of making a better deal that also addresses energy problems. And though he noted in February other states are also competing for data centers, he doesn't think pausing tax exemptions will hurt growth in Illinois. "Everybody wants tax breaks, but these data centers are coming, and I really personally believe they're going to build regardless," Bailey said. To solve the energy problems from data centers, Bailey agreed they should provide their own energy, but also advocated a rollback of the state's landmark climate legislation to allow fossil fuel operators to continue generating energy. He added that data centers should also pay into a fund that would be given back to consumers as a relief on their utility bills. While the candidates battle over data centers on the campaign trail, Pritzker said last week that passing new regulations should be a priority when the lawmakers return for the fall veto session. "This has been going on for quite some time, but they need to come to the conclusion, and I believe that something should be voted on in the November veto session," Pritzker said. This article was from the Capital News Service, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. And there's a huge picture on the front page with the headline, "Students Begin the Milliken Journey." And it's a picture of Evie Drenth. She's helping a first-year student move their belongings into the residence halls at Millikan University. President touts the university's largest class at move-in by Joseph Ressler. With a flurry of mini fridges, large bins, and parents taking pictures, Tuesday was the major move-in day for most first-year Millikan University students in Decatur. "We are so excited for this day," said Millikan President Dean Pribanow. "We are welcoming our largest class. This year is even larger than last year. We even had to open an additional residence hall to house all of our first-year students," he continued. "The new students will spend the rest of the week getting acclimated to the community with Welcome Week activities. I know all of our students and staff are excited to welcome all the new students and their families here to campus, and we can't wait to get going," said Pribanow. This headline, Council votes down mayor's vacancy plan. More wolves sought a way to break the deadlock. A bid by the mayor for a fail-safe provision to override the democratic process and the cause of getting things done proved a bridge too far for a slim majority of her Decatur City Council colleagues. By a margin of 4-3, council members voted down a resolution Monday that would change ordinances governing how they choose to temporarily fill unexpected vacancies in their own ranks. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf had proposed that she or her successor should be able to appoint someone to serve out the unexpired term of a council member who quits, dies, or otherwise leaves early if the remaining council members become deadlocked on choosing a suitable person to serve as a replacement. Moore Wolf had further proposed that if it's the mayor's job that is left open and council members are stalemated on selecting a replacement choice, the mayor pro tem, who is a council member already chosen by their colleagues to serve as mayor in the mayor's absence, would fill that role. The mayor pro tem would serve whatever is left of the mayor's unexpired term until there's an election. All of these changes would only kick in, however, if the standard system of replacing an absent mayor or council member fails to deliver a result. That system gives the remaining council members 60 days to vote among themselves to approve a person judged suitable to fill a vacant council seat until the next election. But there's no provision on the council statute books for what to do if the council, with one of their number missing, can't break a 3-3 stalemate before the 60-day deadline. Maura Wolf said a majority vote was still by far the best way to go, but she didn't want to see the city left paralyzed because there suddenly wasn't a majority to get anything done. "We don't have a solution if we can't come to a consensus," she told her colleagues. The first voice in opposition was Councilman Dennis Cooper, who started his council career by being chosen to serve by his colleagues. He said the mayor's solution wasn't a great option and instead suggested inviting Lady Luck to intervene in competing choices for replacement council member deadlock. "The name should go on a ballot. You have the city clerk draw out a name, and whoever's drawn out of the box or hat, that's who will be filling the seat until the next election." Councilman David Horn, however, said the council had a solid track record of successfully choosing replacement council members under the existing system, and he described the proposed change as a solution for a problem that didn't exist. As he grew more unhappy when he told the proposed ordinance change had been put on the Monday meeting agenda at the mayor's specific request. "I just want folks to understand what's happening," said Horn, who is standing as a rival mayoral candidate to Wolf Moore in the April election. "This resolution, which has been brought forward by the mayor, will allow one person, the mayor, to dictate the composition of elected body. Because at the end of the day, all that needs to happen is the mayor to get the support of two other council members and say, let's wait 60 days and we'll be able to appoint whoever we want. So I'm adamantly opposed to this resolution. It is the 100% wrong choice for the residents of Decatur." Moore Wolf, clearly annoyed at Horn's suggestion, shot back, "Mr. Horn, in all fairness, maybe that's how you would conduct this if you were in the mayor's seat, but I would not. First of all, I hope we don't have to do this, and we don't have a vacancy, and that seats are filled when we get to an election, because that's how it should be, by the people. However, I think it's the best process to have a process in place should something happen, because I do have great concern that this council is very divided, and if you have a 3-3 split consistently, we can't get city business done. We need to have something in case we can't manage to come up with an answer." But the answer the mayor got at the end was no. Her vote in favor of the ordinance change was joined by yes votes from Lisa Gregory and Pat McDaniel, while Horn's no vote was joined by nay votes from Cooper, Ed Culp, and Consuelo Cruz. Now on page 2, man accused of kicking a child cat, pet later euthanized, animal control reports by Tony Reed. A Decatur man jailed on charges he walked up to a child's pet cat and, as the owner watched, kicked the animal so hard it later had to be euthanized, police report. A sworn affidavit described officers arriving on scene in the grounds of an apartment building in the 1100 block of North Main Street and finding the crippled animal lying on the ground. When officers observed the cat, the animal was breathing rapidly and was not able to move, said Decatur Police Department Officer Deontay Lewis, who signed the affidavit. Animal Control Officer Brian Klein advised that the cat is going to be euthanized due to his injuries. The incident dates to the night of August 11th, and the 33-year-old defendant, Dustin W. R. Robinson Beatty, was later charged with committing the offense of aggravated cruelty to animals. The girl who owned the cat said that on the night of the attack, she had earlier seen Robinson Beatty walking up and down and talking to himself in the apartment building's backyard, which he often did. She said Dustin walked towards her cat, who was lying down in that area between two trees. She said she saw Dustin kicking her cat one time. After Dustin kicked the cat, he was visibly angry and went back to his apartment. Lewis said a second juvenile witness, a boy, also saw Robinson Beatty deliver the kick. The child advised he was in shock after seeing this and turned his head around after the kick landed, Lewis added. He said he was not sure if Dustin kicked the cat once or twice. Robinson Beatty was arraigned August 17th in Macon County Circuit Court, and Judge Jack Kiley told him he posed too great a threat to the community to be allowed out of custody on pretrial release. He will be brought back to court on September 2nd for a preliminary hearing when he will enter a plea to the charge against him, which is a Class 4 felony. And this next article, officials, city water system secure. Iran-backed hackers struck the U.S. treatment plants this summer, by Tony Reed. There was some refreshing news at Monday's Decatur City Council meeting about the safety of the water supply. A recent spate of costly and dangerous cyber attacks across the nation didn't leak through the defenses here. A monthly status report from Director of Public Works Matt Newell said security measures built into the city's South Water Treatment Plant were working to keep it shielded from any computer hackers trying to break in from the outside. There were several successful cyber attacks against American water treatment plants in July, said Newell in a briefing memo to the council. Fortunately, our information technology and operational technology teams have designed the Decatur system in a more secure setup than the plants that were affected. The attacks exploited a device called a programmable logic controller. We have many PLCs, but none of them can be accessed from the internet. Newell's memo did not say whether there was any evidence the Decatur water system had been probed by hackers, but his update to the council comes in the wake of a series of sustained attacks on American water treatment plants all over the nation. A cascade of these assaults began around July 27th and penetrated networks in Michigan, Georgia, New Jersey, and South Dakota. In Minnesota alone, some 30 municipal water supplies were breached successfully. Hackers were able to lock plant operators out of their own systems, and in some cases this resulted in flooding, dropping water pressure, and the seepage of untreated water into municipal pipe networks. The hackers went after the PLCs, which are industrial computers used to automate pumps, chemical treatment systems, and valve operations. News reports that the hackers were suspected to be part of the Iranian-backed Cyber Avengers group, which found many of the targeted systems easy to penetrate, often with internet connected systems that had no firewall protection or were only shielded by weak, easy-to-crack passwords. Warnings issued by the Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in the wake of the attacks instructed water utility operators to pull PLC operational technology and controllers from the internet immediately. It also called for firewalls to be installed to protect upgrading of password complexity and increases in training so staff can take over water treatment operations manually if automated systems fail. Newell said his staff, having emerged unscathed this time, would not be resting on their laurels and are looking to further beef up security as part of the plans to expand the South Water Treatment Plant, the city's primary water purification facility. We will be assessing both physical and cyber vulnerabilities as part of the SWTP expansion plan, Newell told the council. Toy guns prompt an active shooter alert. Students playing with realistic-looking toy guns that shoot gel pellets sparked a massive law enforcement response at Millikan University Monday night that had police swarming a residence hall ready to confront an active shooter. The drama went on for more than an hour after teams of officers searched the school's Dolson Hall in the 200 block of North Oakland Avenue to make sure it was safe in the wake of 9/11 calls about shots being fired. There was no evidence of actual shots being fired, and ultimately it was determined to be a couple of students with Orbeez guns to shoot little gel balls, which are not dangerous, said Lieutenant Benjamin Massey with the Decatur Police Department. The 9/11 calls had come in around 9:19 p.m. and sparked fears of a campus gunman. And given the tragic history of real gun violence on American college and school campuses, Massey said any such report is immediately met with top priority response. There were at least 15 police officers from the Decatur Police Department alone that responded, and that was the entire shift. And we also received assistance from the Decatur Park District's police and the Macon County Sheriff's Office, Massey said. Basically, every officer in Decatur and Macon County responded. The officers began clearing the building just like they've been trained to do, and they were able to get it figured out that it was students playing around with these Orbeez guns. The plastic battery-powered guns looked just like an assault weapon from a distance, and they can be set to fire in semi-automatic or fully automatic modes, shooting colorful gel pellets that burst on impact. Massey said the potential for tragedy is there even when officers arrive in response to active shooter alerts and see anybody moving around carrying what appears to be a firearm. Yes, it could have been a very unfortunate situation, he added, noting that the university had posted an active shooter alert before issuing an all-clear update around 10 p.m. This whole incident created a lot of panic, Massey said. The lieutenant, speaking Tuesday, said no arrests have been made as a result of what happened, although he said investigations were continuing and at least one of the toy guns involved had been seized. And yes, we've spoken to the students involved, he said. Requests for comment have been left with Millikan University. ABC sues the administration. Network and parent company say Trump assaulting free speech, by David Shepherdson. Disney and its ABC unit sued the Federal Communications Commission on Tuesday to block an early review of licenses for 8 ABC stations, arguing that the Trump administration is trying to punish the network over its broadcast content. President Donald Trump repeatedly urged broadcasters to drop comedy or news programs he doesn't like or which criticize him, and pressed the FCC on numerous occasions to revoke ABC's license. In a lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Washington, Disney said the FCC seeks to coerce and retaliate against a network that refuses to bow to the administration's demands, calling the agency's actions an extraordinary assault on free speech. Trump waged an aggressive series of attacks on the news media, and the latest move follows a 2-year-long battle between Trump and Disney. Last month, Trump again called for ABC stations to lose their licenses because the network didn't air his primetime speech on elections. The court case will pose a key test of the free speech rights of the media outlets. Disney and ABC asked the court to quickly issue a temporary restraining order halting the license renewal proceedings and preventing the FCC from scheduling a hearing. The company said the public comment period ended this month and the FCC could act at any time. The lawsuit alleges that the administration is violating the company's First Amendment free speech rights, saying that the FCC is using its regulatory power to retaliate against Disney and ABC for programming and editorial decisions that the administration doesn't like. The FCC said the move stemmed from a year-long investigation into whether Disney's diversity policies amounted to unlawful discrimination, an allegation the company denies. U.S. District Judge Lauren Alarcon issued an order Tuesday directing the company and the FCC to propose a schedule for considering the request for a temporary restraining order and told the agency to notify her if it starts the process of revoking the ABC licenses. The White House did not immediately comment. And that'll end part one. We'll be right back with part two, so please stay tuned.